Hello and welcome to the Parenting Severe Autism Podcast. I am your host, Shannon Chamberlain. I'm so happy that you're here with me today. Remember that you can view the transcript over at psa.buzzsprout.com. You can also find links to support the show through the Buy Me a Coffee program or purchasing merchandise, which is just like cups and glasses and water bottles and pillows and stuff like that. And you'll find all of the information for contacting me via email or Facebook. And a portion of the proceeds through purchases and donations are going into a fund to help other severe autism families just like ours and yours. So let's get started. Well, what a time we have had, huh? Hope you guys made it through the holiday season. I know it sucks all the way around between family and school break. What is that all about? Anyway, I think that it should be completely different for our kids. Our son got kicked out of school years ago, so he's retired, but I have not forgotten what the absolute hell that we went through every single year, every single break of the year during school. It's really unnecessary to interrupt the schedule of someone like my kid, like your kid. You know, these guys need something to replace that schooling with, right? I wish they would understand that at school. And, you know, public school just doesn't fit. Our kids don't fit into public school for so many different reasons. And these breaks and routine don't help at all. Right before Thanksgiving, a week before Thanksgiving, our son had to have his very first surgery. He had oral surgery. He had impacted molars. He ended up having all four wisdom teeth removed. And it was scary. You know, he was complaining of tooth pain and he kept saying where it was. We took him to the dentist and they wouldn't do anything for him because they insisted that we go have these molars removed before even having a cleaning or anything, any kind of exam. So we go in for the x-ray and, you know, they said, yeah, we're going to cut these teeth out. And you just start wondering, is this necessary? If it's yourself, you know what kind of pain you're in. You know if this is something that you can live with, that you want to work through, or if you want to just be done with it, you know. And with our kid, he's got this unbelievably high pain tolerance anyway, so he doesn't complain all the time, just some of the time. And then after we had scheduled the consultation with the oral surgeons, he never complained again. And we had to wait a whole month, maybe more than a month, to get in for that appointment. And he never complained again. And we just kept wondering, geez, is this the right thing? Is this what we're supposed to do? Are we helping him? Is this necessary? You know, and I finally told my spouse, look, it's just one less thing we'll have to worry about. These are obviously going to continue to cause a problem, and we might as well just do it. But that's kind of a weird reason to have surgery, because you might as well. You know, we're very against invasive things here in our household. So it was a very weird situation. We did try to prepare our son. Anytime we're going to do anything new, whether it's fun or surgery, we try to prepare him by showing him videos on YouTube of other people doing it. And that was hard. The oral surgery office shared a link for a video, but we couldn't find it. And she said it was graphic and that we might not want to use it, and maybe we should look on YouTube for other things. So we did that, and they're all very graphic and scary at a certain point, you know, in the video, and I didn't want to scare him, so we just watched pieces and parts, and usually he'll, you know, it helps him to prepare, but I don't really think that it helped him at all. It was really hard. We took him in there, and we had arranged ahead of time for them to allow us to go back into the operating room with him until he was under, and that we actually had to fight for that, believe it or not. They say that they've worked with lots of kids with autism, but I don't know why they didn't want us back. I mean, you should know by now, if you've worked with these kids, you should know that you kind of need their parent with them as long as possible. So it must be a different kind of autism that they're working with over there. So we go back there, and I stepped out in the hallway because I'm not really the one that he needs in times like that. It's his dad. And his dad was trying to keep his head still and trying to keep him calm and letting him know that he's going to go to sleep and that daddy will be right there when he wakes up. And, you know, we tried to let him know, okay, you're going to get a poke now in your hand. And it was heartbreaking. He whined and cried, ouch, all at the same time. And it was the saddest, most vulnerable sound I've ever heard, even more vulnerable than the ouch I got when he was in the bathtub and I learned about the teacher abusing him at school with his ear. It was even worse than that. It was just heartbreaking. So we went out to the car and cried. But, you know, when I had my teeth surgically removed years ago, I was in there for a long time, I thought. And this kid was only in there for like 25 minutes. And they texted us like, okay, come and get him, you know, and it was a horrific sight. He comes out in a wheelchair. He's got blood just running out of his mouth. And we were very nervous about trying to help him recover and trying to make sure that he didn't chew his face off or something, you know, and rip out his sutures and all this stuff. As soon as we got the text about going back to get him, he was still groggy. Dad went right back there and, you know, sat with him and tried to make sure he didn't do anything stupid because he was completely numb. And actually, the kid did pretty good. I'm very impressed with how well he listened to instruction after all the drugs wore off and during the couple weeks of healing that we went through. We extended the recovery time. It was like, I think 2 to 3 weeks was in the paperwork. So we just went 5 weeks, you know, nothing hard. We just did a soft, mushy diet. And because, you know, he can't tell us anything really. So we just wanted to do the best we could and eliminate any chance of injury or doubt. You know, so we just went 5 weeks of special diet and treatment and everything. The reason I'm telling you all of this is because, well, first, maybe your kid will go through it and maybe that'll help you at some point, you know, but also on the first day of surgery, when we got him home, he refused to let the drugs work on him. I gave him a really heavy load of cannabis. He had his pain medicine. He had the stuff that they, you know, put in him for surgery. All of that was in his system. And this kid would not go to sleep. He would not rest. And his face just swelled up like a watermelon during the entire healing time, but it just was getting bigger and bigger. And he was just so awake. And we were really nervous. You know, if that's how you're going to be right out of surgery, and you're not going to sleep all day, what is going on, right? So he lived in a recliner in the living room, as did we. And I did sleep in my bed, but his dad slept on the couch right next to him to make sure that he was there for him so that he didn't hurt himself or, you know, do something terrible without knowing what he was doing. Because, you know, he doesn't comprehend everything that we need him to. So we have to do his thinking for him, and we have to do it before he thinks. So it was just really pins and needles with that. But after that first day, the next 3 days in a row, all he did was sleep. It was awesome. And that is the most peace that his dad and I have had in 15 years. So looking back on that, I highly recommend a little bit of surgery. I'm just kidding, but it was really nice. I mean, it was so quiet. We really got to decompress, and this living on the edge, anxiety, stress, PTSD lifestyle just melted away for 3 days in a row. It was just really restorative for us. And yeah, we were nervous and we were watching him all day, every day for those 3 days, but he didn't do anything. He didn't move, you know, he didn't want to eat. He was not happy at all being awake, and he just slept a lot. He had a good amount of cannabis products available to him, and we alternated his pain medicine. We didn't want him using a lot of that, but I know that that'll knock you out, you know, but we just kept him so doped up, really, so he would heal. And because otherwise he's jumping and running and stimming and laughing and yelling, and that's his happy, you know, and that's his kind of his baseline. If he is happy, that's what he's doing. And if he's not happy, that's what he's doing. That's just the way it is. And it was just really nice. We sat in the room in the dark for most of the time. We would watch TV quietly. We would eat in a different room, alternate play. You know, he would sit and I would eat, and then I would come sit and he would eat, just so we wouldn't eat in front of the kid. Because anyway, it was the most peace we've had in 15 years. And it was really restorative and really healing for us as his caregivers to have that break. We've never had a break like that from him while he's at home. The only time we get that is if he leaves. And, you know, ever since the behaviors and SIBs and all that got really bad, we haven't ever had him away from us. So other than, you know, a couple days here and there at camp or something for his day camp. Anyway, what I'm wondering now is whether it's him or us, but it seems like he needs more cannabis throughout the day now since he's healed. And I don't know if that's just that our tolerance has gone way down for his behaviors, or if he is just that much more amped up than he used to be. But it used to be that we would give him his pharmaceuticals and then give him a 5-milligram gummy afterwards. And now he's needing 10 milligrams instead of 5 at a time. So it's really increased. And we just can't figure out whether it's our problem or his problem. But to get him to where we can deal with him, we're having to double the cannabis. So it's just hard to tell whether he's at fault or we are, you know. So that was right before Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving was a non-event. You know, we don't do it anymore. The family doesn't come around for holidays. I may have mentioned this in another episode, so I'm not going to go over all of that again. But, you know, Thanksgiving was just nothing to us. It was fine. And then came his birthday, and we had those big plans. I think I mentioned this. Sometimes I record episodes and I don't publish them because I think it's too much, you know? So please forgive me. I'm having trouble remembering where I left off. But just a quick recap, his birthday was in December before Christmas, and we had plans, and we had been making these plans for quite some time to go to a hotel and, you know, make sure there's a pool and let him swim. We actually developed a relationship with a manager at a local hotel just because of his needs to go swimming and have a safe, quiet place to go, you know. And well, his dad ended up getting COVID and we had to cancel our birthday plans, but I still had to do something for him. It's not his fault, and he's not going to understand that, well, there's just no birthday because dad's sick, you know, that doesn't fly. So I had to take off of work, take care of my spouse, get him through his COVID. While I'm taking care of him, I had to do the birthday celebration, go to the store, get all the ingredients. He doesn't really care much about anything except for the cake. He has to have a chocolate cake and a vanilla cake separately every year. So we make healthy gluten-free cakes. That's a completely different story, but I had to go get all the ingredients and make the cakes, try to have a good time, get all of the provisions for him, and try to celebrate him while his dad is very, very sick in his room, you know. So I'm doing all of that. And while I'm planning all of this, the day before his birthday, which is at that point the worst of the COVID that my spouse was dealing with, my spouse's mother calls wanting to know if she can last minute, just drop in on his birthday at 10 a.m. and hang out with him and give him a present or something like that. And she called my spouse's phone. We didn't answer because he's sick. He literally could not talk. So ends up calling my spouse's dad, whose house we live in, trying to ask him to make these plans. And I just, you know, I let him know, no, my spouse has COVID and no one's coming over. Plus, we already have plans, and you cannot come over at the last minute. Even, you know, 12 hours is not enough notice for me or my kid. I'm trying to give him a good day, and a good day starts with knowing what's going on. You cannot interfere with the plans that I've laid out for him. My kid sleeps in, and 9 and 10 o'clock is about the time that he's expecting to be eating breakfast and getting cleaned up after breakfast, and it's just not good, and you need to make plans ahead of time. Father-in-law doesn't want to tell her we need to make plans ahead of time. He just keeps saying, well, I'll just tell her that you guys will call when he feels better. No, why don't you tell her what I said, which is we need to make plans in advance? Well, I'll just tell her that you'll call her when he feels better. You know, so we went back and forth on this, and I'm saying everything loud enough for her to hear me on the cell phone that is on the table, and they still will not accept my answer. So it goes to, he'll call when he feels better. Well, when's he going to feel better? Well, I don't know. So that happens, and then comes Christmas, and on the day before Christmas Eve, mother-in-law texts my spouse, how are you feeling? Obviously, she's texting to see how he's feeling, because she and her ex-husband established a few days beforehand that if he felt better, he would call her so that she could come and see our kid. So, you know, you got to be able to read in between the lines here. We know she's not trying to find out genuinely how my spouse is doing. She just wants to know if he's good enough for her to come and disrupt everything for her to make herself feel better. So the two of them end up exchanging words through this text, and they have a history. We all have a history with her, and he ends up telling her about all the things that she's done to hurt our son and that we don't want that in our lives, and she ends up forwarding all of that information to her granddaughter. I don't understand why that's a healthy thing to do. We completely disagree with all of that. So now the granddaughter wants to jump on our social media pages on Christmas Eve and start cyberbullying us, just talking all kinds of negative stuff about us, and we had to block her and shut her down and not respond. And while that stops the cyberbullying, it does not give you closure, and that's a hard thing for me to deal with. So I'm going to tell you right now, I made a human shaming video and I put it on my personal Facebook page. I had to get it out, you know, and what was really bothering me about the whole thing is that all of the things this young lady was saying about my spouse on Facebook, all of these things were complete misconceptions and misunderstandings about our lifestyle. And that led me to look at why do these people think these things about us? And then I realized it's because they don't care about my son. They don't care enough about him to ask anyone in this house about him. They know nothing about him and what's going on in our lives. That's why. Because if you do know and you say these things, that's really hurtful. If you do know what my son is going through and what we are going through as a result of trying to help him through his life, and then you say these things, it's absolutely horrible. So just imagine. Now, look, we used to sell cookware in the home, and one of the strangest excuses we used to hear before enlightening our clients about reality was a woman would say, oh, I don't work. I can't make that decision. I'm just a stay-home mom, or I'm a homemaker. I don't work. I can't make that decision. Newsflash, if you're a stay-home mom or a homemaker or a housewife or whatever you want to call it, you're working. You may not be getting wages, and that will screw you in the end because you won't be able to collect what Social Security and unemployment and all that kind of stuff, but you are working your ass off to keep a clean and healthy home environment is work. To parent children full-time is work. To do homeschooling is work. And that's for neurotypical people I'm talking about. Now, if you are a caregiver of a handicapped person with learning disability, neurodevelopment issues, and severe autism, and injurious behaviors, and all of the things that we deal with, and all of the side notes of disease that our kids end up dealing with, in addition to autism, make no mistake, you are working. You're working harder than most people could ever imagine, and it's constant. It's not a 9-to-5. It's not a 40-hour job. This is real. And this family member, this niece of ours, wanted to say that my spouse is a disgrace, a loser who doesn't work, and then wanted to make fun of him for having a YouTube channel as his creative outlet. Now, this YouTube channel is also where my spouse and our son try to work together on videos. They try to sing together, and, you know, it's really hard work for my kid. And this is where we publish all of that. You know, my spouse, I know I've said it before, and I know it's redundant, it's a sad story, just like all of you have, but it's still our reality. My spouse was the top earner in our family. He was excellent at his job, and when he finally had to stop and stay home, we weren't in our own business anymore, but he was still self-employed. He was, you know, an executive trainer trainer, and he would go out and do great things for great amounts of money for other companies, and he would sell himself to those companies, and the money was good. And he gave all that up to take care of his son, who cannot survive without us. And I can't do it because he's too big and too violent. It has to be my spouse. So he gave up everything that we had been working for and planning for the entire time we've been together. He gave it up to take care of our kid because there are no services. There are no resources. Everywhere that we go, the autism school and the group homes and the behavioral schools and all of that, behavioral schools are too far away or too full. The autism school said he's too autistic. The group homes have said his needs are too great. He requires too much of them to be accepted into these programs. That's what we're dealing with. And this little girl has decided that our family is just a bunch of losers, right? And we're not doing anything. We went from being the rich uncle and aunt. Oh, she was so nice. Boy, she was lovey-dovey back then. Now we don't have anything financially to offer her, and now we're just pieces of shit. And she's just gonna blast that all over Facebook. So I didn't get any closure from blocking her, so I created this human shaming video, and I watch it a lot. It cracks me up, and that's what's important. You can't come and attack my family like that. My man has done things that most people would never do. You know, my son's own birth mother has walked away from him, and this was before the autism was really bad, you know? So anyway, that was my way of healing from that and helping my own family. She'll probably never see it because she's blocked, but whatever. The fact that the grandmother handled things the way she did from start to finish, and the fact that the niece handled things the way she did from start to finish on this, just really showed me that nobody cares or respects my son enough to stop and take a minute out of their day at some point throughout the year, any year at all, to find out how he's doing. What is he up to? How is autism affecting him? Is it something that's serious? You know, no one has checked on my kid in years and years and years. And I remember, you know, school breaks used to be so hard. He's, like I said, he's been kicked out of school for quite some time. So we've gotten used to not having anything going on. But I used to complain to my friends who had typical kids and, oh, they would just laugh and laugh and laugh. And it's not the same. You know, your typical kid can leave the house. They can go out and play in the snow, ride their bike if there's no snow. They can walk around the neighborhood or go to their friend's house and, you know, they can do stuff. My kid can't do anything except drive me absolutely crazy and destroy my house. So I don't think it's anything to laugh at. And it's really hard to be a parent in a world where there are no other severe autism parents to talk to because you get laughed at. They're just like, oh, ha, 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 your kid's driving you nuts for winter break. Join the club. No, different club. Totally different club. So now he's just bored constantly. Boredom is the new routine, if you know what I mean. So I think that his quality of life really sucks, and I wish that there was more for him. I wish we could expose him to more things, but he doesn't like anything. And it just kind of, you know, with him being an eloper and all of the things that he does that make him a danger, it's just safer for him to be bored. Unfortunately, that's where we're at. I wish I could make him a great sensory area, have the things that we used to have for him in our home, but this isn't our home and it's too small to do that stuff with. So he just walks around bored. He lays in his bed a lot. He gets high a lot on cannabis gummies and stuff, and he likes it that way. He's a grown man and he's allowed to do that. I prefer to be the one, or have his dad be the one, to distribute the gummies, but he has actually recently figured out how to open the gummies all by himself. So when he can find them, there's a good chance that he will eat a few and then he'll be really high and he'll fall asleep, you know, and that's his life. But boredom is the new routine. So at least he's used to it and he doesn't flip out as much because it's the same shit, different day. It's Groundhog Day for us all the time, and now it's Groundhog Day for him. So we're all in the same revolving hell. He was going going to day camp, but you know what? Day camp is actually temporarily canceled because of low enrollment. I'm so sad for him. That's the one place, the only place that I've ever been able to physically see on his person that he felt safe, comfortable, and accepted. It's a beautiful thing. It brings tears to my eyes every time I see him in the environment of day camp because this place is amazing and the people are so good that work with him. The kids are great. You know, it's for all different ages, all the way into adulthood, and it's just really great for him. And unfortunately, he's not able to go. He was out for many weeks because of his teeth, and you know, we didn't want him getting a hold of food that he shouldn't be eating and possibly injuring his gums. And we didn't want him running and jumping and doing all of these things, you know, to bring his blood pressure up and stuff. So he didn't get to go, and then he gets to go back, and now it's canceled. And it was only a few days a week for a few hours a day, but it was better than nothing, and it's good for him, you know, but now it's canceled. So if you have any programs like that around you, I know you don't have time for much, but if you can make posts on Facebook or try to get to raise awareness in your local area about these programs, if they do require a certain number of people to be enrolled, that would be the best thing to do, because otherwise, you know, you'll run into what we're doing right now, which is just twiddling our thumbs and waiting for people to enroll their children in this special program. You know, last night I gave him a bath, and after his bath, he got in bed and he just started crying. He was already unhappy. He said that his ear hurt, so I had treated his ear. He said it went away, but then he started crying. Sometimes he's crying for a reason. Other times, like, okay, so King Kong is his tearjerker movie, and it's not a movie that jerks tears immediately. It's one that he'll watch, and then 3 or 4 days later, he'll just start sobbing, and he'll sob for days afterwards. And it's always about King Kong. And he actually wasn't allowed to watch King Kong for like 2 years because this was his cycle. He did it on purpose. He wanted to cry. And, you know, when he does it, he then also wants to be consoled. And I'm not playing that game all the time, okay? If you want hugs and you want to know that you're loved and you want contact and stuff, that's fine. But I'm not going to dedicate my life to allowing you to watch a movie repeatedly that makes you sob and then come to me for comfort. How about just don't watch it in the first place and then you won't need comforted? I am not into that, you know? So we don't really let him watch it a lot. And when I know that he's getting ready to watch it, I have a talk with him, you know, and I ask him to try to take it easy, maybe take a break if it gets too sad or if you get too excited. And I check with him throughout the movie. And when I know that it's coming towards the end, when he gets really sad about it, I will kind of try to interrupt him and make sure he knows that I know what he's doing and that I want him to be careful. Okay, so the point is, 2 days in a row, I walked into the room while his grandfather was watching King Kong with him. 2 days in a row. Now, the first time I noticed it and I said something to my son, you know, to try to remind him that this is not a great situation. And then the next day, he's watching it all over again. And he's not watching it. His grandfather is the one queuing it up and, you know, putting it on the TV. And I don't know, his grandfather's been around all this time. He was always at our house, and now we're always in his house, you know? And for some reason, he doesn't know this rule, you know? So I said something out loud like, oh, King Kong again, 2 days in a row? Really? That's going to make you very sad. Can't say anything directly to the culprit. You have to make it really loud around the culprit so maybe they'll pick up on it without saying how you're being mean to them, because he's a narcissist. So I said something about that. Now he hasn't watched it since then, and it's yesterday was about day 4, and he starts sobbing at night. So there's a chance that he is doing his routine cry after King Kong thing. However, there's something else that he's been doing for many, many years as well, and it breaks our hearts. And he did it again last night when I went in his room and asked him, why are you crying? Why are you sad? All of the things. And he says, I'm sad. I say, I know. Why are you sad? And he's been saying this for so long. He says, I'm all alone. Now, I've mentioned this kid doesn't have words all the time, and he doesn't always have the right words. But this is in perfect context every single time. He's been doing this for over 8 years, giving that as his reason for crying. I'm all alone. He'll look you right in your eyes, wipe his tear off with his hand, and say, I'm all alone. And it just breaks our hearts every time because he is all alone. That's what leads me to the subject of respect, which will take us right into the next episode. Not only respect for my child's needs, but also for his shortcomings. It's not his fault that he doesn't understand your social cues or that he's not developing the way that everyone expects people to develop. And I think that, you know, to hell with all the autism awareness and autism acceptance, that doesn't really do any good. I haven't seen that it does any good when you're dealing with strangers or family. If you're going to disrespect the child, you're causing him to feel all alone. So in the next episode, I'll share some stories of different ways that different people have shown different levels of disrespect towards my son. And these actions towards my son are either putting him in danger or potentially causing him emotional damage. I think it's important to respect these kids. Again, congratulations for making it through those holidays. And hang in there. You're a superhero.